Let's all take a step back.
1 year ago.
Constantly looking backwards.
A well-worn path.
We will chart a new course.
Including energy and healthcare and agriculture and IT.
It's going to be up to you.
Depending on what the results are could depend on what happens next.
I believed then and I believe now.
Let's take stock. As part of our coverage of this political year, we're doing what a lot of people in the U.S. are doing as they think about casting a vote for president, taking stock of the last 4 years and looking ahead to the next 12 months. Today, we focus on the military as an institution and as a symbol of this nation's power in the world. On both levels, the Pentagon is likely to change significantly over the next few years. No one knows that better than retired four-star Air Force General Lloyd Newton. The general is a beloved figure in the Air Force. He's the first African-American pilot on the elite Thunderbirds team. Everyone calls him Fig Newton, the name Lloyd he dispensed with a long time ago. Change, he told me when I sat down with him last weekend, is coming for America's armed forces.
I retired from the Air Force about 10 years ago, and certainly the shift that you're talking about, I agree with you, I think has been an extremely important one, because we're going to close the chapter on basically being engaged in war 24/7 for the last 10 years, which has had a tremendous impact on our military forces. So yes, I agree with you, it's going to make that shift. The shift it will make, though, I think, will be along the lines of we will have a smaller force, which we traditionally do when we pull back from these kinds of events. But it will also be one where our military will continue to be effective, maybe different. And a lot of folks see that as shifting a lot more to what I might would say more specialized forces, such as special operations forces and so on. My perception is that certainly special operations forces will have an important role to play, but there's still going to be this balance of other forces and other services as well across the board. And that's always the question that our military leaders, I think, have to wrestle with, is how do you come up with this right balance for that creates the right strategy that meets the requirement for threats that we see out there in the future. So that's going to be the real trick that they're going to have to work very, very carefully, I think.
There was a lot of talk in the beginning of the very first Gulf War about the lessons from Vietnam as America resumed a combat mission in that war, that the outcome of which was very successful. Considerable talk about what are the lessons from Vietnam in designing the operation in Iraq and Afghanistan. So a considerable conversation on what did we do wrong tactically and strategically in Vietnam that we're not going to repeat in Iraq and Afghanistan. Not so much talk on what are the lessons from when the war in Vietnam ended. How did we deal with that versus how are we going to deal with the consequences, social and otherwise, of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan ending? Could you engage in the conversation of what lessons do you think we need to learn from the Vietnam era now that this conflict and these two conflicts are winding down?
Well, most of America will recall, we came out of Vietnam on a very different kind of circumstances with reference to the American public respect for its military this time than it was when we came out of Vietnam. I came out of Vietnam, and immediately when I got back, I wanted to pull off my uniform because I didn't want anyone to see me in uniform. Not true with our troops that are coming back this time. However, because of technological shifts and because of the way we fought the war and because of medicine, veterans who are coming back and military folks who are coming back find themselves in a very different state and a larger magnitude, I might say, than we found when we were coming out of Vietnam. And so that's something we're going to have to deal with. So the same things and lessons learned that we found coming out of Vietnam, to a large degree, they do not apply and will not apply coming out of this war. For instance, much more brain injury, much more body parts injury. But our medicine got so well that those folks still live and they got back. And so now them and their families, we're going to have to live with those tragedies that took place. So this is a very different, psychologically, I think. We have a much larger number of people dealing with psychological issues. Not that we didn't deal with them or didn't have them when we came out of Vietnam. But I think in this case, for this 10-year war, much, much larger population that's dealing with.
The role of the military in American society in terms of social transformation, has it surprised you at all in terms of racial issues, don't ask, don't tell, social issues, moral issues, lifestyle issues. Did you go into the military thinking it was going to be this experimental zone for American social policy, sometimes very much ahead of the rest of the country?
Well, I never really thought about it when I was going into the military. But once I got on board, in this case, the United States Air Force, it became very clear to me that over a long period of time, and maybe practically throughout the history of the country, that the military led in this arena. And it's an area that I'm extremely, extremely proud of. I mean, when I came in, we were dealing with extreme racial issues, both in the country and in our military at the time. And I was fortunate enough to be asked to participate and have a part in how do we come up with the resolution for the issues that we were dealing with. And I'm very pleased to say that we've made a tremendous amount of progress in the Air Force and in the military in general, and particularly for an institution the size of ours. And I'm willing to put that institution up against any institution around the world and say, I think we're still ahead. We will continue to make that kind of progress, and I'm fine with that.
With the prevalence of drones and the use of drones as a power projecting force in American tactics and strategy to a certain extent, did the Air Force make a strategic error in not taking more of the drone capability into the Air Force, have it be centered within the Air Force? Is there somehow a sense that remote control planes are just not something the Air Force with its pilots and Top Gun mentality wants to get involved with?
No, I think it's just the opposite. As a matter of fact, the Air Force does have the most of unmanned systems in its, and particularly the larger ones, is in the United States Air Force inventory. And so the Air Force leads in that area. It doesn't take long to take a look at this when you say, why should I risk an American life to be in a place that I can have an unmanned system do that without exposing them?
It's General Lloyd Fig Newton. He's a retired four-star U.S. Air Force general, the first African-American pilot in the U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds. Among the things he told me is that he completely supports women in combat. We spoke last weekend. He's part of our Taking Stock series. All of those interviews are available at thetakeaway.org.